ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Today, we'll be talking a little less sports gambling and a little more sports business with Andrew Brandt, who's a guy I've been wanting to have on the pod for a very long time. Andrew was vice president of the Packers from 99 to 2008. He was a player agent before that and repped Michael Jordan, among others. He currently writes for Sports Illustrated. He's the host of the Business of Sports podcast, and he's a big deal over at Villanova Law School, too. This guy does it all. He's got a Sunday 7 newsletter as well, which you should check out if you haven't. We're going to talk Dan Snyder and the Commanders possibly setting up shop in Virginia, a little NIL, Brady, Rodgers, MJ. Stick around for a fantastic Ricky Williams story at the end of this podcast. It also involves Master P. This pod's loaded. I really liked it. Here he is, Andrew Brandt. Andrew, it is a pleasure to see you, my man. As I said in the intro to this podcast, been wanting you to come on for a long time. Thank you so much for putting up with my very persistent emails. It's great to finally connect.
Yeah, it's always good to be with you, especially out of D.C., my hometown, born and bred in the nation's capital. So it's always good to talk to people from down that way.
Perfect segue. You're from D.C. I'm from D.C. This podcast is based in D.C. Let's start with Dan Snyder. Last weekend, Jarrett Bell of USA Today reported that the NFL owners are counting votes to see if they have enough to force Snyder out. They'd need 24 votes out of the 32 teams to do it. This is in response to allegations of sexual harassment, alleged financial improprieties. Of course, there's a ton of other stuff that's gone on with Snyder over the years, too. Andrew, at this point, do you think Dan Snyder will ultimately be forced out?
Well, let me say this. I have tons of friends and family down there, and they're all asking me the same question. With some hope, I believe that it would happen. You mentioned some of the issues with him, the reluctance to change the name for decades. The financial improprieties about visiting team ticket revenue, and then most egregiously, this toxic workplace environment for so long there, now added with allegations by a former cheerleader of groping and steering her towards his limousine one night. So that's all not good. And none of that is good, and none of that is going to go over well with his NFL brethren. But here's my but. I know a lot of people don't want the but good luck getting him out. I just think that you have a couple problems. One, you need 24 votes, and he has allies, like him or not. He has allies among the league. I don't know exactly the names. I know Jerry Jones is one. I know they've been close over the years, and Jerry Jones wields a lot of influence in the NFL, as everyone knows. That's one ally, and I think there are others. And I think if he was going to be pushed out, subtly or not so subtly, it would have happened by now. Not necessarily actually pushed out, but that move towards pushing him out, which would take a long time to begin with, would have happened before. And the other thing is, you know my saying on Twitter, there will be lawyers. There's no one that's going to resort to litigation probably more than Daniel Snyder, if in fact he is pushed out or even tried to be pushed out. So what I tell people is, yes, there's a litany of misactions, but as far as pushing him out of the league, don't hold your breath.
What do you make of this report coming out now? Obviously, you know, there are meetings happening with the NFL right now. Yeah. According to Jarrett Bell, he had, I believe the report said, one owner, one background talking to him about the counting votes. Why do you think this report came out now?
I don't know. Just a good point that you make, that as you and I sit here talking, there are meetings going on in the NFL. They're about other things. I don't even know, Josh, if Daniel Snyder is at these meetings, because as part of his penance for what happened with the workplace environment, his wife, Tanya, has been representing the team at official functions. And I think that continues now. And I think she would be the one representing the team at the owners meeting that's going on now rather than him. So I don't even know if he physically is at meetings anymore, whether it be in Palm Beach earlier this year or now. But we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I certainly know Jared Bell. I respect his reporting. I think there are, as much as I said, there are allies, there are others that are worried about what he's brought to the surface. Again, this visiting team revenue thing where people say, well, if they mess with the money, they're definitely kicking him out. I don't think it's going to be when revealed. I had AJ Perez, who broke the story on my podcast. And, it's not millions of dollars, and I'm not sure it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's not to excuse it. And it wasn't done all the years, and it wasn't done all the games. But so I don't think that's going to rise to the level of let's kick him out. And I'm sure they have their reasons why it did or didn't happen. So we'll just see. You know, we'll see where this goes. But Daniel Snyder is a survivor. He just seems to be there. And I'll say this personally, Josh, I mentioned I'm from there. I'm the same age, basically. And we grew up in the same area, went to different high schools. But I don't know him. I mean, I saw him at league meetings, said hello. But it's just interesting. You know, this is a peer of mine, age-wise, and where we grew up. So it's just always interesting for me to talk about.
Can you quickly tell the story about when your friend dropped his kid off at Snyder's house?
Yeah, and I obviously keep my friend's name out of this, but I do have a friend down there who has, this is years ago, but has children, but at that time they were young children that played with Dan Snyder's children. And he picked them up at the house. And as he picked them up, Daniel was coming home. And my friend, just sort of on the way out, said, "Hey, Dan, thanks for having the girls over. Really appreciate it." And he looked at my friend, 50-something-year-old guy, and said, "Mr. Snyder, it's Mr. Snyder." So my question to my friend and my friend's question to me was, who does that? Like, who does that? So that always sticks with me.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why I asked you to retell the story. That's unbelievable. Yeah. Andrew, we're recording this Tuesday. Monday, it came out that the Commanders had secured land in Woodbridge, Virginia, which for listeners who aren't from here, it's a hike from DC, drive time wise, not mileage wise, but drive time wise. You go 95, that's about as far as it would take you to get to M&T Bank Stadium where the Ravens play, north on 95. What do you make of that coming out? And what do you think about the team? You grew up with them. What do you make of the team potentially going that far south?
Well, it's always been a downer for me where they've played since my time growing up, because I would go to RFK Stadium in downtown DC. It was always just a great memory of me and my dad and going down to RFK Stadium, and it was rocking. It was an old building. We sort of rocked, and I grew up, we had a lot of success with the team. And now out in Maryland and at FedEx, and then this Woodbridge, to me, it's all about the business. The bottom line is always the bottom line. And what it tells me is that in the race, I guess you would call it, to secure the Commanders for the future, Woodbridge is in the lead. So that site would be in the lead over a DC site, a Maryland site, the existing site. For a report to come out like that, is there's a lot of funds being allocated towards a potential stadium site, whether it's from the state of Virginia, the city of Woodbridge, some local counties, whatever it may be. That's the name of the game now, as I do in a lot of my talks about the sports business. It used to be sort of the economics never really involved stadiums. Now the economics are all about stadiums. We saw it in Buffalo. We're seeing it in Tennessee. We saw it in Las Vegas. Who can you get to pay for these facilities, even though the public never shares in any of the profit side? That's just an enormous business advantage for NFL owners.
So obviously the public money is probably the number one factor in a potential new location. Do you think, though, beyond that, that if the team were to move to the Woodbridge area, that their calculation would be that they could replace any fans they would lose in DC and especially in Maryland, north of DC, and replace them with fans from further south in Virginia, Richmond, say?
Yeah, I think you bring that up. It's the first time I thought about it, but I think so, yes. I mean, I think all these NFL teams feel, and you have a better sense of it being down there than I do, that you build it, they will come. They'll come to see this product, which is the most popular product in the world in terms of sports. Now, I know that they've suffered in attendance up there at FedEx in Landover. So you can't just say that willy-nilly like it's automatic anymore. I mean, listen, I was 10 years in Green Bay. The waiting list is 60 years, to get a ticket. So that's a little different. But I grew up in Washington where that was the case there. So it's really unfortunate to hear these stories of empty seats and see them. But yeah, I think we as media and fans say, oh my God, Woodbridge, but they look at it as, yeah, it's close enough. They'll come, 8 days a year, 8 times a year. Yeah, they'll do that.
Yeah, the team, the Commanders, were second to last in attendance last year. Only Detroit was worse, which, I mean, I can't stress this to listeners who aren't from here enough. That was unthinkable, not that long ago. It was unthinkable. Andrew, let's hit a couple other topics here. Last week, we had the whole NIL blow up. Nick Saban said that Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M, and others were buying players. First off, what was your reaction to all that?
My first reaction was, where did Saban say this? And then I found out it was an Alabama business convention. I'm like, okay, now I get it. He's trying to tell all these local business leaders, like, step it up. We lost our recruiting advantage to Texas A&M because they stepped it up more than we did. Step it up. We're losing this kid to Jackson State. step it up. And the Miami guy's paying big money. Come on. Listen, I said it immediately on Twitter. Like, he said the quiet part out loud. As someone in the sports business, I had heard about this Texas A&M recruiting class with all kinds of numbers, whether it was $1 million, $3 million, $10 million, $20 million for the best recruiting class in history. And then you hear about the guy in Miami, you hear about the kid at Jackson State. So he said the quiet part out loud. Taking that aside, I've been talking about this all year now. Give you the quick history for your listeners. On July 1, the NCAA, which had been preparing for 2 years to govern and regulate name, image, likeness, because I was on a committee, they were preparing for 2 years. They threw up their hands. They abdicated responsibility. They said, we're out. Now, that was not only a shock to me, it was a shock to the schools, it was a shock to the conferences, and it was a shock to the state laws. No regulation. So when you have no regulation, what do you think is going to happen? Like, the cat's away, the mice are going to play. That's what happened. So NIL was meant to be and is for 70 to 80% of all college athletes, this nice, fun thing where athletes are shouting out something on Instagram, where they're getting a few $100, where they're going to a local sporting goods shops and signing for $600 or $1,000. That's great. Where Kenny Pickett is taking his offensive lineman at Pitt to a local steakhouse every Thursday night. Great, great. But then there's the sinister side. And the sinister side is big time college football, big time college basketball, seeing this as a way to recruit and maintain the best talent in the country. And it becomes an arms race. Now, this was never supposed to be used as a recruiting inducement. And I don't mind saying it is being used as a recruiting inducement. Now, again, it's not the school. That would be across the lines, outside the lines. It is not the school. It is the boosters who we are trying to say is not the school, but it sure looks like it's the school. So collectives, to define them for your listeners, are pooled funds from donors used for athletes. And everyone's getting them. I'm at Villanova. We're forming a collective because we have to be able to do that to compete in obviously our chosen sport is basketball. So this is what's going on out there. And is it used as recruiting inducement? Yes, technically. If the NCAA decide to come after these collectives, the collectives have lawyers, the collectives have people that say, hey, we did it by the book. They have to come and do a quid pro quo. In other words, they have to come and do appearances or go to birthday parties or go to charitable functions. That's all you need for NIL. You need some quid pro quo, even though, wink, wink, are they really going to the birthday parties? Are they showing up 5 minutes? Whatever it is.
Any thoughts on where this all ultimately goes? It's such a new thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think if some of these booster groups look at it and say, hey, we just spent $1 million and this kid's not even playing, do they pull back? Or do they just say, no, let's go get another one? You know, that's the competitive aspect of college sports that we don't think about. The boosters, like, who's a booster? Everyone's a booster. You know, if you live in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you're a booster. And I don't know where it goes. I do think that the NCAA is probably going to look for a test case without what I talked about, without a lawyer, something that's just so egregious for deterrence. Like, show these boosters you can't do this. Now, these rules against boosters have been on the books for 50 years. SMU got the death penalty. Other schools, you can't have boosters paying athletes. But you can have boosters paying athletes for quid pro quo. And that's where it gets a little messy. I think to sort of sum up this area, I think in, pick a number, 1, 2, 5 years, we're going to have the NCAA for the 80% of college sports I talked about, for lacrosse and swimming and diving and track and soccer and women's gymnastics and softball and field hockey. And then we're going to have something else for big time football and basketball. Just, it's not going to be the NCAA. It's going to be some other entity that's maybe gets professionalized in some way.
Andrew, talking about big, big money. Tom Brady reportedly signed a 10-year, $375 million deal with Fox to be a broadcaster once he retires. It's insane money. It's apparently roughly double of what the Romos and the Aikmans of the world are now making. However, you, I think, very astutely pointed out on your Business of Sports podcast that the number actually, I mean, it's big. It's big no matter what, but it may not look quite as big by the time Brady retires. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, a couple of things. If you're Brady, why would you sign now? And it has to be an extraordinary number. And as you pointed out, and I pointed out, the sort of the number right now with Aikman and Romo is about 18 million a year. This would average 37.5, which is roughly twice. So if I'm Brady or representing Brady, of course I'm not going to do a deal now for 18 million, because the market's going to rise and you don't know how long you're going to play. And to get Brady to sign, they have to give him basically an offer he can't refuse. They, meaning Fox. So they did a 10-year deal for 37.5 a year, which of course they deny. So who knows? But yeah, they had to come with something that, what, as we just discussed, is twice the market. But how long is he going to play? So if he plays till age 50, and I don't discount that, the market may be $37 million a year by then for whoever the next Troy Aikman or Tony Romo is, or Tony Romo himself. So we just don't know. It may not look that outrageous when he's done playing. I don't think he's going to play to 50, but maybe 2 years from now, it may not look as different either.
You're a longtime NFL front office guy. Would you, if you were still there, let's say you were still with the Packers, would you have any problem with somebody who's currently the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Bucks knowing that he's about to make that incredible amount of money from Fox, a league partner, as soon as he's done? Would you not care about that? Would that be an issue at all?
No, I think you got to treat people in special categories. And, you know, the guy I talk about a lot is Aaron. And again, when I was at Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers was just starting his career. So I didn't know Aaron Rodgers like I know, like he is now, but we had Brett Favre. And yeah, let's be honest, it's not a democracy at these levels. You know, Brett Favre drove the product for the Packers for 16 years. We treat him differently. And you would treat Tom Brady differently. You treat Aaron Rodgers differently. They move the product. I don't think anything you pay those guys is enough in terms of how much publicity they bring you and how much awareness in the mind share of not only this country, but around the world. So I don't have a problem with that. I do think it's so interesting with Brady, and I just wrote about this for Sports Illustrated. He was a guy for 2 decades. He did 2 things. One, never said a word. And number two, took less money than he could have gotten in the marketplace, took less on his contract. He gets to Tampa, and he's one, taking all the money he can, and two, he's everywhere. you know, he's the most exposed guy in the NFL, and he's like on social media and he's doing these little things and he's out there, he's traveling and everything, he's putting it all out there publicly. And it's just, to me, this transformation of Tom Brady at age 44 is fascinating.
Wanted to ask you about Rodgers. Obviously, there was, it seemed certainly that there was a bit of a tumultuous situation there, at least for a time. Do you think things with Rodgers and the Packers are good now? Is he settled in for the long haul? Is the you know, I don't know what you want to call it, the disagreement, has it been settled?
I'm going to answer both those first two questions in completely different. I say yes and no. I think yes, things are resolved with the front office. Yes, he's in a good place with the team. But I don't think for a minute things are long-term there. And I've said this, you know, again, a year and a half ago, I thought, no way Aaron's leaving. And everyone said, he's so mad he's going to leave. No, he played and he was MVP. But I actually thought he'd leave this year, but he didn't. And I now think he'll leave next year. I just think that he's a different cat. You know, he may retire. He may want to be somewhere else. But I've studied this contract. And, you know, the problem with media reporting of contracts, I don't need to talk about, but it's just 4 years, 200, 3 years, 150. No, this is a one-year deal, the way I read it, for 40-something million. And then there's all these options for the Packers, which will actually increase something called dead money if he retires in 2 or 3 or 4 years, which is so rare. Usually the dead money goes down as the contract goes on. This is the dead money going up. So I just think it's a year-to-year proposition with Aaron. So yes, he's happy. They're resolved. He's willing to deal with these young receivers now that they traded Adams. He's okay with that. He understands. But I don't look past 1 year for Aaron.
You've known Aaron Rodgers since what? His very early 20s?
Since we drafted him, yeah.
Were you surprised by his being so open with some of his feelings about the vaccine and whatnot? And I asked because I think for a lot of people on the outside, it was surprising. We did not expect that. However, you really know the guy.
I do, but as I said before, I knew him as a younger player. Now, we've texted over the years. I've seen him in my visits to Green Bay. So there hasn't, you know, there hasn't been a lot of contact, but I wouldn't say we're talking very often. But no, I'm not surprised. I think he's just very open and honest, much more so than he was early in his career. I think he understands the responsibility he has. So when he said the things about the vaccine, he did come back and say some things. I realize maybe I overshot it, even though he maintained his feelings about the vaccine. He's a thoughtful guy. I, like a lot of people, think that his time with Pat McAfee during the season is the most must-watch media in the NFL to me, because it's never scripted. It's never a cliche. And I kind of like people that are interesting. I know Aaron gets a lot of grief on social media, on media, for being whatever, but I think he's bright. And I certainly don't agree with him on the vaccine stuff, but so what? You know, I think he's interesting. I'd like to do a study one time of players like Aaron, like Kyrie Irving, like Novak Djokovic, all of whom I think are extremely bright, but won't put that vaccine in their body. I just think it's fascinating. It has nothing to do with anything, but it's like those three, you know, when they talk, yeah, I tend to listen. But when they talk about that, I'm like, wow, why? You know, it's just interesting that I think about that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Before you got into being a front office guy and everything else you've done, you've had like a million jobs over the course of like really, really cool career. You represented players, including Michael Jordan and some other huge guys, Ewing and all. What was that like, Andrew? And can you get into the background a little bit? Like, how did you end up representing Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up there. I went across country to Stanford. I don't know how I got in. Today's market, I would never get into Stanford, but they took a chance on this little kid from D.C. It's funny, Josh, because if I had gotten into Stanford Law School, I probably never would have come back east. But I didn't. But I got into Georgetown Law, came back, went to law school in my hometown, and I knew a firm called ProServe. because of tennis. So I grew up playing tennis, and the same guys that kind of ran ProServe ran these junior tennis tournaments and ran the 16th and Keg tournament, which has gone under different names, where I was a ball boy every summer. And I just went in and said, hey, can I help? You know, anything? I'm in law school here. And they let me. And that was kind of my entry point as an unpaid intern. Started working there after college in tennis. I'm sorry, after law school in tennis. And then lo and behold, I look down the hall and there's a guy named David Falk. And he's got Michael Jordan and Pat Ewing and Alonzo Mourning and Allen Iverson, all these guys. And I'm like, can I go work for that guy? And this is what I tell young people all the time is like, look for your opportunity. So I saw that opportunity. And then I saw a second opportunity because David was so busy with Michael and Patrick and everyone who I got to work with as a, you know, sort of the junior guy, which was great. But we had a few football players. And David's so busy with the basketball, like no one's paying attention to him. So I saw my opportunity. I'm like, I'm going to be a football agent. And we went from 3 to 5 to 10. By the time I left, we had 16, 18 NFL players. I was now a football agent. That sort of got me off to my start of my career. So again, like I tell young people, you got to look, you know, look for your trailheads in your career. It's not linear. You'll see a path. I saw a path. Look at me. I never played football. I was a fan, as I told you about the Redskins, but here was my opportunity. And it sort of led to me a life. And I've had three chapters, as you know, agent, team executive. And this last chapter, which I'm really most proud of, I sort of left the Packers with this idea that, you know what, I think I could influence two areas, media and academia. And I've spent the past now 11 years just sort of finding my niche in bringing people behind the curtain, whether they be students or listeners, readers, viewers on TV, whatever. And I'm always about that. I'm always about giving people a little bit more than they get from the standard stuff.
Is this a third and final act? Do you see a fourth coming up? Am I asking you to look too far ahead?
Well, again, I think, you know, life changes all the time. There's not going to be a return to a team, I can tell you that. I have no interest in doing it. I've been approached a couple of times. I really feel that been there, done that. I've helped out agencies. I'm not going to go back to being an agent, but I've helped out with some player like contract negotiation on a spot basis. I've launched this newsletter I'm excited about. I've launched a premium site where people get to talk to me every day. I do a video every day in weekly meetings. It's called the Sports Business League. I want to see if I can grow that. And enjoying my podcast and newsletter and column. And oh, by the way, I have a full-time job too at Villanova, where I'm sort of educating young minds really interested in sports business, sports law.
Okay, Andrew, this is kind of an annoyingly broad question, but I'm hoping you can kind of take us home with this one. You've done so much. We've gone through it. Give me one story that'll make listeners say, huh, or surprise them or whatever. Great if it's got an athlete in it. Doesn't have to. Just give me something. Take as long as you want.
Well, I'll do one, a quick one from growing up there, and then I'll get into a career one. When I was in high school there, Landon School for Boys in Bethesda, Maryland, our sister school, Hilton Arms, there was a girl a year younger than me that everyone should know, named Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who is now, I can't stop watching Seinfeld my whole career. I love that show. And so that was my claim to fame. I sort of knew her and had a date with her, but that was a double date. It was
really,
I was with the other girl, so it wasn't really a date. But career wise, you know, I was an agent representing this football player named Ricky Williams, and he was, you know, the best player I ever represented. And he had just graduated Texas, and he won the Heisman Trophy, and I'd been recruiting him for a year and a half. And we got along, and it was great, and I got along with his family, and I was going to Austin, Texas all the time, and I got him. Like, I got the player that's going to make my career. And now I'm traveling with him and we're getting ready for the draft. And I see guys hanging around him and I'm like, who are these guys? And he finally tells me they work for Master P. And I'm like, who's Master P? He says, a rapper. I said, what's going on? He said, well, I want to go with Master P. He's this, you know, incredible music guy that's starting an agency. I want to go with him. I said, well, what's that mean for me? I said, well, I want you to work with him. I want you to come work with Master P. I said, me with P? He said, yeah. I said, oh my God. All right. Well, now I'm telling my wife, I think I'm going to go work for Master P. Because if I come back to my firm without Ricky Williams, they're going to say, you know, get out of here. So I guess the moral of the story is the exact same time this is happening, like the exact day, within 48 hours, the Green Bay Packers are calling me. Now, I'd had Packers over the years, but I had a third string quarterback named Matt Hasselbeck, who obviously had a 20-year career, but I'm like, why are they calling me? So I finally call them back and they're like, we just lost our coach. Mike Holmgren went to the Seattle Seahawks. I'm like, okay. And he took Reinfeldt, the guy that ran the whole business operation. He took him to Seattle. I'm like, okay, why you call me? And they're like, well, how'd you like to switch sides? And I said, what? Come to Green Bay? And they said, yeah. I said, well, you deal with 100, 200 agents. Why me? They said, well, you know, you have a nice way about you. We'd like the way you negotiate and work with Hasselbeck. They love you. And we want to get more agent friendly. Let's hire an agent. And I said, okay. And along the way, I said, don't take offense at this question, but do I have to actually move here to do this job? And they said, no offense, but yeah. So that was one of those moments in life where, oh my God, the best client of my career that was going to take my career to another level just fired me. And 24 hours later, one of the most storied franchises in the history of sports wants me to run their operation. And I'm like, okay. So I moved to Green Bay, Wisconsin, sight unseen. It was the most unique experience I've ever had with the way they wrap themselves around a sports team. But I tell that story all the time because I just think people have to realize, not only do doors open and close, but you have to allow for these things to happen. You know, don't get so linear in your plans. Allow it to happen. Have a supportive family. But just, that was a 48-hour period where who knows where my life could have gone at that moment.
I don't know what's more amazing, the absolutely wonderful takeaway from that story, Andrew, or the fact that you, Andrew Brandt, were this close to apparently becoming a no-limit soldier.
Yeah, I don't know if that would have happened.
Hey, man, this has been absolutely great. I truly can't thank you enough for coming on. This has been a really wonderful 30 minutes you've spent with us here. What do you want to plug? I mean, plug away. Where can listeners find you? Take as long as you want. I know you've got a million things going on.
Yeah, I got a lot of things going on. As I mentioned just in a couple answers ago, I started this newsletter, kind of a labor of love, about a year ago, and we're up to about 12,000. But I want everyone to sort of follow it, get it on a Sunday email every Sunday morning to your inbox, and you just sign up at andrew-brandt.com. And then, as I mentioned, the Sports Business League, andrew-brandt.com/SBL. That's a pay site. I try to give good value at $20 a month, where I'll give a daily dose of video, a weekly meeting where we all get together, and then, of course, some quarterly instruction, webinars, things like that. That is something I'm really getting excited about too, a way to sort of bring people into my world even more. Podcast, Business of Sports, column at Sports Illustrated, Twitter, Andrew Brandt, Instagram, Andrew Brandt 2. I think that about covers it.
I'm surprised that you only have, I think you said 12,000 subscribers to the newsletter. I'm one of them. I think it's very, very good. And I would recommend it as part of my Sunday reading every Sunday. Andrew, can't thank you enough for coming on Sunday 7 newsletter, Sports Illustrated, Business of Sports podcast, Villanova Law. You're amazing, man. And hey, I'm not going to bug you for a little while, but can't promise a few months I'm not going to get back in your inbox again. Thanks so much.
You got it, Josh. Really enjoyed it. Take care.
There it is, ladies and gents. Loved that interview with Andrew. Boy, did he deliver, and then some. I feel like he's got so many more stories too. Hopefully he'll come back on the podcast at a later date and we can delve a little deeper into some of those. But like I said, that was great. Thank you to Andrew. We'll be back to doing a little more gambling talk next week. We'll probably catch up on NBA playoffs and who knows what else. As always, new episode will drop on Wednesday. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling. And you can email me, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.